So we'll talk about this. So we saw that in self-Julian Mills, we can compute the form factor for the operator trace p squared as a holomorphic Wilson line. So one way to motivate celestial holography is the following. And we can recast this as a computation in a two-dimensional, well, roughly speaking, conformal field theory. Now, you're probably not going to be shocked that there's a two-dimensional conformal field theory hanging around, because when we're talking about holomorphic Wilson lines, that's really what that is. Yeah.
Where does the conformal part come in when we're thinking about holomorphic Wilson lines?
Right, so the holomorphic Wilson lines lives in a CP1. And when we say it's holomorphic, well, you should think of there's some 2D system which is chiral. Right, holomorphic and chiral really mean the same thing. So since it's chiral, it's automatically conformal, or more or less. Okay, so we wrote down the Wilson line, holomorphic Wilson line, by giving a formula. So let me remind you of something. The formula for a Wilson line, which is this path ordered exponential, is kind of a bad thing. What do I mean it's bad? It's not really what a Wilson line is. It's not the fundamental definition of a Wilson line. So some of you have maybe seen this before, but example of why it's bad. Suppose we cut space-time. Or suppose we have, suppose say if space-time has a boundary. Like this. Some kind. And then I had a Wilson line. So this formula will not tell you what happens here. So the end of the Wilson line must change the Hilbert space . This formula is this formula really works best if I have a closed loop, or something maybe going off to infinity or something like that.
Hello. Could you please check if the mic's turned on?
It is turned on, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, but this expression doesn't really tell us what happens if I cut space time into two, what happens at the end. So any time I have something like this where I change my system along a line, it's not a good thing just to write the formula like this, or a non-local formula. What you really have to do is tell me, what are the degrees of freedom living all along this line? And then you will get this formula by integrating out those degrees of freedom. The more fundamental thing is, what physical thing lives on this line? And this formula does not tell us that. So the correct formula, so I choose a representation or of my gauge group, a Wilson line, is a quantum mechanical system on the line with Hilbert space, or and Hamiltonian the gauge field in this representation. So we just have an ordinary quantum particle. I'm taking something really dumb. I'm taking a quantum system with no Hamiltonian at all, and then I'm coupling it by declaring the Hamiltonian is the gauge field. So by A, I mean the component of A pointing along the line. So if we do this, then if I have my Wilson line going from 0 to t, and this is in the time direction, the evolution of a state from 0 to t is the path ordered exponential, the integral of the Hamiltonian. Yeah?
Is the Hamiltonian, like this is not gate invariant, is that okay? Or like, what?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So implicit, I'm declaring that the states transform in this representation under gauge symmetry. And then if I make the states transform in that way, then the Hamiltonian is gauge invariant. Because both the states of my new system and A transform, and the transformations cancel out.
Sorry, Kevin?
Yeah?
What does it mean that the Hilbert space is R, where R is the representation of G?
Well, I suppose it means what I just said. So a priori, R is of some, you know, it's a vector space of some dimension. So I just take a finite dimensional system with that Hilbert space. But when I say it's a representation of G, what I should have said, if I was saying it more clearly, is that the Hilbert space is acted on by the gauge transformations of my bulk system according to this representation. So this here. This dictates transforms under gauge. Okay, are you guys?
It's really related to this. Like, I don't understand the construction, this construction, because I thought that the space of states, like physical states, should be made of gauge invariant states.
Yes, that's correct. But I'm so before So what I'm describing, when I said the Hilbert space, I mean the Hilbert space of this one-dimensional system before I've coupled it. So before I've coupled it, it's just a system with Hilbert space and this vector space. And to couple the system to the gauge theory, I need to tell you how the Hilbert space will transform under G.
But we are coupling it as if A was like a background field or a...
Yes.
So it's not a dynamical field for this? Or it's not yet dynamical?
It's not yet dynamical.
Okay, then I understand.
Sorry,
then everything is not gauge invariant, because if the...
Oh, no, everything is gauge invariant. Right, so this, I mean, it's gauge invariant for the same reason that this expression is gauge invariant. For example, should I write it? So if I take a state psi at t equals 0 and a gauge transformation, then the gauge variation of psi is chi t equals 0 times psi. So this transforms the Hamiltonian. So you want to say that the time evolution a t times psi, and this is a gauge covariant operator. I tend to make mistakes when I write, when I'm forced to write down detailed things I didn't think about. A is a gauge field, so it's a connection. The geometric meaning of a connection is that it allows you to do parallel transport along any direction, and that parallel transport is a gauge covariant operation. So that statement is really, you know, the Hamiltonian for a quantum system whose Hilbert space is the representation really has to be gauge covariant in the same way as parallel transport is.
I think I'm also confused about the setup. Particularly, I don't understand what the Hamiltonian is in this case. I guess you just said that it has to be the same thing as the parallel transport implemented by the background gauge field A.
Yeah, I've just declared that that's the Hamiltonian. I mean, if it would help, there are examples of this where everything is a Lagrangian system. That might make things more clearer. So, example. If G was un, S-U-N, sorry, and I take my representation to be the direct sum of the exterior powers of the fundamental, we can realize this in a Lagrangian way. Where I take fermions psi I in the fundamental and psi bar upper I in the anti-fundamental, and the Hamiltonian is I integrate over the line, so on the Lagrangian, psi bar. So here, if psi and psi bar transform under gauge symmetry, in the natural way, this is a gauge invariant Lagrangian. So I hope that's clear. Yeah.
I'm a bit confused about the notation. So the R representation is the sum of all forms on F, and
yes.
What space is F?
F is the fundamental representation of SUN.
Okay.
Yeah. So I hope it's reasonable here that this Lagrangian is gauge invariant. So now we need to check that it reproduces what we said earlier, that the Hilbert space of this particle is that sum of the exterior powers, and that the Hamiltonian is A. So it's easy to see that the Hilbert space of the psi bar system is generated by a vacuum with psi bar I vacuum equal zero. So the states are just psi I one, psi I n vacuum. And these are antisymmetric, and this is in K, wedge K F for K equals zero. So the Hilbert space is easily seen to be this direct sum. And what's the Hamiltonian? Let's check the Hamiltonian by looking at the equations of motion. Del T, if I vary, say, psi bar, I'll get something like del T psi is equal to A T psi. This evolves. Psi evolves by the matrix A T, say at time T. So we have this time dependent Hamiltonian. Okay, is this example more transparent? Okay. But you know, it's hard to write down a quantum mechanical system in a Lagrangian way, whose Hilbert space is just the fundamental or something like that. Yeah.
So the Hamiltonian is AT, but it's only for massless fields.
It's only for which?
For massless fundamental representations.
Yes, I'm starting off with the quantum system, quantum mechanical system, with no Hamiltonian at all. And then I'm adding on this time-dependent Hamiltonian. I have to say, some of this discussion is a little bit off topic, but I feel it's pretty important. So I'm glad we're going into it in detail. What else was I going to say? Now, if you really wanted to go and figure out, how do I get a system whose Hilbert space is the fundamental, what you need to do is find a symplectic manifold whose volume is n, which is acted on by SUN, and then do geometric quantization. So this is possible, and there's a detailed discussion of it in one of Witten's papers somewhere. In math, it's called the Borel-Weil-Bott construction. Any other questions about this? How about that formula for the path order exponent? Are you?
I'm sorry, I need to ask a question. So the reason why the integral is gauge invariant is because psi and psi were transformed as inverses of each other.
Not inverses, but transposes.
Transposes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the gauge field itself picks up a conjugation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have another question in the definition of the evolution loop or like normally there is like a trace in the evolution loop.
Yes. But if I have quantum mechanics, kind of the partition function on a circle of quantum mechanics of radius of length say t is equal to the trace of e to the minus t times h in the Hilbert space.
So that integral back from 0 to t is a circle?
Pardon?
Like the interval that we are...
Well, it doesn't have to be, but if it was a circle, then when we're considering the partition function of the quantum mechanical system, we would get a trace in this representation. Is everybody happy? happy with this formula about the path ordered exponential being the, you know, if I have a time dependent Hamiltonian, how do I evolve from time zero to time t? That formula is also the path ordered exponential, right? You've seen this before? Yeah, okay.
Can I ask one last question?
Yeah, of course.
This formula that does the evolution from zero to t, that expression is not gauge invariant, right?
It is.
As it is right now.
Yes. Because it's gauge invariant once you take into account how the gauge group, the group of gauge transformations, acts on the initial and final states. So this path ordered exponential is a map from my representation at t equals 0 to my representation at t equals t. So I can take an initial state, psi, in my representation at t equals 0. What I need to check is that this is an intertwiner. For chi, gauge transformation, path ordered exponential that this is equal to that is, it intertwines the gauge axons at this guy, initial time and final time. This is true by the usual, this is true for the same reason that the Wilson line itself is gauge invariant. Normally, when the Wilson line itself is gauge invariant, we have this argument about a gauge transformation at each point canceling with some boundary terms. But now, because we have an open Wilson line, we pick up two boundary terms at either end. That's this and this. So this is true. Okay,
I'm kind of lost because you said that the original definition where a Wilson line is an integral over some r is not correct, but what
I didn't say it's I don't mean it's wrong, it's just not a complete definition. Mm-hmm. Because mainly because I don't know, if you give me that formula, there's lots of things I don't know about the Wilson line. I don't know what happens when the Wilson line, when I cut my Wilson line into two, I don't know what its contribution to the Hilbert space is. That's the main difficulty.
And here we know it somehow?
Here we know it because we were saying the new Hilbert space is, the gauge invariant states I get by adding on a copy of OR to my old Hilbert space. It's like, something like this. The old kind of non-gauge invariant. And then I tensor with OR, and then I impose gauge invariants. So for instance, if we're studying scattering amplitudes of the gauge theory, it's really common to say, oh, I'm going to scatter a gluon. That's in the adjoint representation. But that's not in the Hilbert space, because it's not gauge invariant. But it is in the Hilbert space if I have a fundamental, if I have a Wilson line also in the adjoint representation. So a lot of these computations people do in gauge theory are kind of secretly about this kind of thing.
In that example, the non-gauge invariant gluons could be like the endpoints of the Wilson line.
Yes, exactly.
So the open Wilson line on its own would be not gauge invariant, like the endpoints too, but the system together is gauge invariant because it's like a propagation of state.
Let's see. If the Wilson line, yes. Absolutely. So the Wilson line, here's my kind of boundary. We get time equals at infinity. Here's my joint Wilson line. So a state that lives here should be something that transforms in the adjoint. So having the Wilson line end and having a gluon together is a gauge invariant thing.
The formula with for the Hilbert space makes sense to the extent where we're tensoring the new part with the representation R to the old Hilbert space.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that confuses me is why did we say old non-gauge invariant?
Oh, just because the Hilbert space, the physical Hilbert space, is by definition the gauge invariant quantities. So to construct this, we're kind of changing the meaning of gauge invariance. So normally you would say, I take my Hilbert space, and I project out those things which are not gauge invariant. Here we're not going to do that. We're taking our naive Hilbert space, which I'm calling the non-gauge invariant thing, and I'm projecting out those things which are not gauge invariant after I tensor with the OR.
So that action of tensoring with R or introducing the Wilson line changes what was originally
exactly
gauge invariant to potentially not.
Exactly. Suppose this was the fundamental, then the states I'm going to select here are those which transform in the anti-fundamental, which of course you don't have if it's just gluons, but that would pick out quarks. Okay, again, this is totally off topic, but one other way you can model a Wilson line if we think about it in terms of fermions, instead of introducing fermions just living along a line, we can introduce fermions which are extremely heavy, which fill spacetime, but are extremely heavy away from that line. So by thinking in those ways, you can model a Wilson line as just an actual particle in your system, but that's extremely heavy, which is why it's fixed to go in a particular direction. Like a light particle going to wiggle around, but a heavy one has to go. So one way. Okay. So what about 2D systems? So if we're on twister space, So say a patch, which is equal to C3. And we have this Lagrangian, where we have A, which is a 0, 1 form. Which is a 3, 1 form. So a holomorphic Wilson line is roughly some kind of integral over C roughly an expression like this. So I want to try to explain how you can realize such holomorphic Wilson lines by coupling to a 2D chiral system. And then the end point of this discussion is going to be the following. We're going to consider what is the most general 2D chiral system we can couple. And that most general system is the celestial CFT. So I should ask, have you guys, have had a course which discussed CFT? And did you discuss two-dimensional CFTs in particular, or not so much?
We talked about 2D, the 2D CFTs that arise from the string roll sheet.
Yes.
Theory.
Like, did you talk about the WZW model?
No.
No, okay. And did you talk about chiral CFTs? Or the did discuss the operator product expansion? Okay. So, what is a 2D chiral CFT? It has states, which are the same as operators, OI in a vector space V. For any, each OI has dimension, also known as spin, say di, and there's an operator product expansion OI at 0. OJ at Z is equivalent to sum K 1 over Z DI plus DJ minus DK OK times some coefficient. And the sum is over k such that this is negative, or sorry, positive. Okay, so the idea is in any computation or process, we can replace OY at 0 times OJ at Z can be replaced by the OPE plus regular terms. I'm going to assume that these guys' dimensions are integral. And typically, this sum is some finite sum. Mm-hmm.
Should we think of the OIs as primary operators?
Well, I didn't say, I mean, to talk about primary operators, you need to talk about the Virasoro, and I didn't tell you about the Virasoro yet.
Okay.
So I just think of them, let's assume they're all operators.
Okay, so and the sum over the sum is over all the possible operators that I can have.
Exactly, yeah. Because, of course, the output of an OPE doesn't have to be primaries.
Sorry, can I ask one more question on that?
Mm-hmm.
So here, usually like in higher dimensions, computing the conformal blocks is a bit difficult. So here, would the conformal blocks be something like the 1 over z functions times the coefficients, the z's?
Oh, man. Sorry, the word conformal blocks is kind of overloaded and means several different things.
Okay.
So remind me what it means for you. So.
I think for me, the way I understood it is like you can decompose the expression into two parts. One that is just purely kinematical,
mm-hmm.
or which has the operators.
I see. So then the purely kinematical part is just this.
This part, yeah.
Yeah.
Potentially with those coefficients, the CIJ case.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they depend on the...
Yeah. But in any case, I mean, yeah, okay. There's some kind of special functions that appear that are dictated by conformal symmetry. And here it's just these, extremely simple.
Why are the dimensions integers?
What's that?
Why are the di's integer?
Well, that's gonna. I just wanted to declare that to make things a little more simple. So the powers of z that appear there have to be integers, otherwise you have branch cuts, and branch cuts aren't really part of the story. That then your OPE isn't. Then the operators aren't mutually local. You know, it's possible to have half integers, and then you have some constraints that you still only find integers in the OPEs. But just to make things simple. Suppose we have a 2D CFT, got C, and we couple to holomorphic BF theory, or indeed any holomorphic theory, by saying, firstly, A couples to operators say AZ bar. J Z of these will have to be of spin one. Secondly, any operator O at Z transforms under bulk gauge variation . So this formula, I'm going to maybe a little unmotivated for now. So this is okay. So this second part is when we had an ordinary Wilson line, I said the Hamiltonian is given by some matrix. Those matrices were the representation I've chose. And I said, okay, the way states transform under gauge symmetry is related to the Hamiltonian. They were given by the same matrix. Here I want to do something similar. So this plays the role of the Hamiltonian. It's how they couple. And for reasons that I hope will become clear later, this is the correct formula to declare how things state transform. Okay. So I want to calculate when is this gauge invariant? So we're going to do a little calculation that's just like the calculation of how a Wilson line is gauge invariant. And we'll find gauge invariance determines these OPEs of these guys. So the reason we're doing this is that, as I mentioned, ultimately we want to think, what's the most general gauge invariant thing we can put in? And that most general thing will be the celestial chiral algebra. OK, so let's go through the calculation. If we integrate out the CFT degrees of freedom, we are left with this kind of expression. So this is, if I was to couple to a quantum mechanical system and I was to integrate it out, I'd be left with kind of some integrals of my gauge field times the correlators of whatever operators I inserted, how they coupled. It's the same thing. In the quantum mechanics case, this is what gives you the path ordered exponential. In this very general system, this is the kind of replacement for the path ordered exponential. And we want to say, what properties of these guys tell us that this is gauge invariant? So how do we do this? Let's just look at the first couple of terms. We have, I'll discard the n equals 0, because that's just boring. If A goes to A plus d bar chi, plus chi A, this becomes now, we would like these two terms to vanish. This one vanishes because this is integral minus the integral of chi d bar j equals 0 because we have a chiral safety. So the main property of a chiral safety is that operators, their d bar derivative vanishes. This term, must cancel with the n equals 2 case. So what's the n equals 2 case? I'll have this double integral az1, az2, jz1, jz2. And the gauge variation will give us terms like this. Plus some other kind of similar terms, which I'm not going to give every detail. And then we integrate by parts. We get integral chi z1 az2 d bar jz1 jz2. I'll bring this inside. And I want this to match what we found in the first term. This must equal to J. Great. So just by asking gauge invariance, we found that D bar of this must be that. So we conclude putting in all the gauge indices. Delta z1 equals z2, f a b c j c z1. So we have the OPE. There's a factor of 2 pi I. Okay, this is the. So, to sum up, we can ask, okay, let's try to couple chiral defect by coupling my gauge field to some current. What equation does that current have to satisfy? We do a little manipulation, and it has to satisfy this equation. Now, has anybody seen this? I mean, I know Surya has, but anybody else seen this equation before? Yeah. This equation appears in the WZW model. So this is the WZW current algebra, or Kass-Moody current algebra. at level 0. Yeah.
But I thought that you said that the var of things are 0. Is that like an anomaly for the identity or something like that? Or that?
It's not really an anomaly. What's the word? It's kind of. I'm taking.
Like chiral here, is it a symmetry, or because maybe that's what I'm not understanding.
So chiral means if I have a single operator, everything depends holomorphically on its position. Now if I have many operators, everything still depends holomorphically on their positions, except when they touch. And there's a word for this, kind of point splitting contributions or But this is something you're familiar with in other contexts. If I have a scalar field theory, then the expectation value of that operator will satisfy the Laplace equation. But if I have two such operators, each one individually will satisfy a nice Laplace equation, but there'll be, because of the presence of the Green's function, I'll get a delta function contribution from the whole thing. So there's something similar here. Yeah?
I have two questions. The first one is adding on top of this question is, so I can't exactly do d bar, like, I can't do the product rule on that operator using b bar. Like,
you can as long as they're separated. Right? As long as Z1 and Z2 are not the same, you can.
Okay.
But when Z1 and Z2 become close, we should replace them by their operator product expansion, which has a pole.
And another question is for this particular algebra to come out, or PE expansion to come out, we had to couple an anti-homomorphic gauge field to a homomorphic current.
Yes.
What would happen if we coupled it the other way around, like homomorphic-homomorphic?
Holomorphic-holomorphic, you would get something funny, because if you look in this very first step, one of the terms in varying A involved d bar of chi, and then I said, well, this is chiral systems, so d bar of j is 0. But if instead A was holomorphic and I had del of chi, then I would get the equation that del of j is 0. And if j was chiral, it already had d bar of it was 0, you would find you had a topological system, because del and del bar both vanished. Okay, so maybe the punchline is, I wanted to say that celestial CFT is the universal thing we can couple. This is a thing we can couple, considered the most general thing. But what we're kind of seeing already is whatever the celestial algebra is, it has to contain this Kass-Moody at level 0, which is in fact a known result. Okay, any other questions?
These Fs are those Cs?
These Fs are the structure constants of the gauge algebra. But what we've determined, they are indeed those Cs as well. So this is the formula for the Cs as the structure constants of the gauge algebra.
I have two questions. The first one is, what do you mean by at level 0? And the second one is, you said the most general theory, the most general chiral CFT that I can couple to a gauge field in such a manner is the celestial CFT.
Mm-hmm.
And then the algebra, the celestial CFT algebra necessarily has to contain
this
algebra.
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, if I have the most general thing will be thinking about, I can couple A to something, I can couple B to something, and I can couple the derivatives of A and derivatives of B to stuff too. Whatever, that'll get some huge thing, but it will always contain the terms where I just couple A to something.
But I would still have it as a subalgebra.
Yeah.
Sit in as a subalgebra.
It happens to sit in as a subalgebra, yes. Oh, and about the level, there's another term people write down which goes like this. Times the identity operator. And this would be at level k. But it doesn't arise in this discussion. So that term is zero. Yeah?
Could you explain a little more about how, like, what in the space-time means coupling this? Like, is it that we have a Wilson line? And it's in its world sheet, we have this kind of CFT.
Exactly. So we have, I have a holomorphic Wilson line. Well, it will end up being, I mean, the statement that it's a Wilson line is kind of the statement that these correlation functions of the J's look like 1 over Z12, 1 over Z23, that kind of thing, which they do. So more generally, we have some 2D chiral system, and I'm coupling it, the bulk, by coupling A to J, formula for how they're coupled.
But the bulk there is three-dimensional.
Yeah, three complex dimensional. But I'm just restricting A to this two-dimensional region and integrating it over there.